broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome to another episode of Refresh Your Wealth with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. I am the Mark in that equation, and my amazing co-host is on the line with us, Matt Sorensen. Welcome.
Yeah, baby. This is Matt. You know, I'm the good-looking one. You can't tell that by the voices on radio, but
yeah, you can say that because there's no,
there's no evidence.
Fact-checking right now going on.
That's true. That's true. It could be fake news. You never know.
Fake news. Yeah, fake news. Matt Sorensen is a good looking one. Yeah, I'll call that out as fake news anytime. Well, welcome everybody for listening. We got a great show for you planned today. And I know some of you that are, if you're listening to this and you're single and you saw the topic as how to pay your spouse, good job. I just want to say, you know, that is positive thinking right there, Matt. Anybody that's single right here, I want to just pat you on the back and go, you know what? You're thinking ahead. That's what you need to be saying, you know?
Yeah. Get your priorities in line. How can I be the spouse that gets added to payroll?
That's true. You could be thinking, I want to be that spouse. How to put me on payroll.
Yeah. And you know, I don't want the job part. Just put me on payroll. Okay.
Yeah. I want to say to
KKOSlawyers.com. Let me know.
Yeah. And if you are under age 18 listening to this show, shame on you. That I just want to say that you should not be thinking about getting married. This is the furthest from your life plan at this moment. But maybe you want to be the next cool guy or gal at the cocktail party. You know, you're like,
we just lost one listener, the one 16-year-old listening to the show. Yeah. Well, this is a big topic. There's, we get this quite a bit for those business owners out there. You know, they may have a spouse that could have a day job. Maybe they don't have a job. Maybe they work with the kids more. Maybe it's you're both involved in the business full time anyways, and you're already doing this. So we want to talk about when to add the spouse on payroll. There's a lot of factors that go into it, right? There's some tax issues. What about Social Security? What about my retirement plan contributions? What about benefits like health insurance or even things like that? There's all these little things to think about when you do that. So we want to filter through that for you.
Yeah. And I know many, many people think this is an issue. If I want to pay my spouse, I just put them on payroll. And you just think that's the way you do it. No. There is some really cool strategies you've got to be aware of that are very, very important. So in fact, it can be very complex. In November, December, every year, we are slammed with phone calls. That's our busy time. If you're a good tax advisor, no offense to those out there that are busy in April. That's cool. You got a big, 1040 push to get taxes out by April 15th. That's fine. But if you're a business tax consultant, November and December are a nightmare because everybody wants to get in right before the year end. Should I fund this? Should I fund that? Should I pay my spouse? Should I pay my kids? Should I, do this, write this off? Because it's game over after January 1st. There's only like two or three Hail Marys you can throw. And you want to be thinking about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay, Matt.
Well,
if you're new to the show, what we do is we have a tax and legal tip, something that everybody can take away. And, so some of you that are single thinking, well, I'm going to listen in, get the tax and legal tip, and then get out because I don't want to pay for a spouse. And especially some of you that are recently divorced, you're out. You're like, I am not getting ever married ever again. I was talking to a guy, this is a few years back. He goes, Mark, he'd been through a terrible divorce, and male or female, they're no fun for any side of the party. But I was talking to this guy and he goes, Mark, if I talk about getting married again, slap me. What I'll do is I'll just go out and find a woman that I really like. And then I'm just going to give her half my money and walk away. I'll just do that. It's less painful. And okay.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Bitterness, Yeah. I know. So we bring this in. I mean, let's keep this, let's turn the coin. Let's be on the other happy-go-lucky side. This is a spouse you want to put on payroll.
Yes,
you
know what I mean? There we go.
And you know, for those of you in Utah, we're just talking about one spouse, okay? Adding one spouse to payroll. All right, just keep that in mind. It's my throw that Utah joke in every 3 months.
You know? Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
A little play there.
Yeah.
But let's get the tax and legal tip first.
Yeah. So tax and legal. Matt, you're going to do the legal tip?
Legal tip. Yeah, I got a legal tip. Okay, let's fire away.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, here's my legal tip. This is a kind of a big picture legal tip. And it has to do with how to structure holding your assets and operating your business. I'm going to give you a quick example. This is a client I talked to about a month ago. Client was a chiropractor, had a operational business using an S Corp, leasing their office right now. Client was getting a new loan to buy an office condo, which is in like this little medical office park, that his chiropractor business was then going to move into.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And why so he's going to own the real estate. Exactly. And his business fits perfectly into it. He's got the sizings right. You know, it just works for his growth and everything. And he's actually going to save money. He's going to own the building. Now, do we want to have the S corporation that he operates his business out of buy the building? No, don't do that. Okay. What we do, we set up a separate LLC. The LLC he owns, or his trust for his estate plan, owns the LLC. And then the LLC is going to lease the building to his operational S Corp that's the chiropractor business. And his chiropractor business is going to pay rent to the LLC that owns the property. So that is there's a number of reasons we're going to do that. Let me break it down. First, we want to separate the assets, the real property, from the liabilities of the chiropractor business. You know, maybe he cracks someone's back a little too hard and he gets a lawsuit.
Ooh.
It happens. We don't want the real estate to get in the mix of a lawsuit. So it's in a separate entity that can't be touched by liabilities from the chiropractic business. Also, he's expensing the income now out of his chiropractic business, which does a lot of great things, even like 199A and all that stuff. We're lowering his taxable income there, pushing income over to his real estate business where he's picking up income there. And it's just a good push of operational business expense over into this rental real estate income now over on his the LLC that now owns the property. So there's a lot more to it than that. But just keep in mind, if you're buying a property to put your business into, you're usually going to do the two entity structure there. Maybe generally an S Corp for the operations and an LLC that's separate for owning the building. And I'll say he did an SBA loan for the building. And Mark and I have done this with office properties we've bought for our law firm. You just have a separate LLC. It works for the SBA loan. They know it's still you. They know you got a separate operational business over here that's going to lease it. It's all fine and dandy. Very common in commercial leasing and commercial loans and SBA loans.
I love it. And Matt, obviously you've highlighted the legal side of this, which is the asset protection. And you use that example of an adjustment gone bad. what the tax issues actually get even more complex now under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act with the 199A pass-through. So we've got this pass-through deduction on the S Corp, and it actually also applies to the rental property side, even if you're not a real estate professional. It's a whole other class of issues that your accountant needs to be familiar with. So under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, if you're a small business owner, you're saving more in taxes. This is a great tax act for the small business owner. Now, some of you may have filed a personal return and you had a big W-2 and day job, and you're not getting the itemized deductions you used to, and you did not have a good experience with your personal tax return. But if you're a small business owner, we're seeing across the board small business owners taking advantage of the new bonus depreciation, the auto deduction, and the 199A pass-through. And it has never been better. I've been across the country on news channels now talking to people around the country that this has never been, it's never been this good. From a tax perspective for a small business owner. And so keep in mind that this is a two-pronged approach that Matt brings up. I love it. Separate the real estate from your practice, your small business, whatever it is, your manufacturing, own the building. When you walk into an Applebee's or a Chili's, you think Applebee's owns the building? No. They have a separate holding company for the building. The
Applebee's Real Estate Holdings owns it.
That's right. And this happens every day. Very common.
So when you're eating good in the neighborhood, what is their slogan? Eating good in the neighborhood? Is that something it? Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. When you're eating good in the neighborhood, just come back to this example here.
You were making that joke. I wanted to play on that, but I was taking a swig of my morning rock star.
You kind of missed the window there.
You missed your rock star this morning?
No, I said you missed the window to chime in there. So
fair enough. But, did you drink your rock star today though too?
But I did not. No. Okay. No. Right. I'm trying to, the carbonation. I'm trying to limit the carbonated drinks.
That's why you drink. Yeah, that's why Rockstar Restore lemonade. No carbonation. No
carbonation. Okay.
No calories. No sugar. Just pure caffeine love, baby. Right there.
And okay.
It's not hot. It's nice. I know there's a lot of coffee drinkers out there. Mix it up a little. Try out the lemonade Rockstar Restore.
Delicious cold. Okay.
All right. You'll feel like a rock star.
Okay.
And that goes for our sponsor of Rockstar. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Promo code MarkJKohler at rockstar.com to get 10% off of your new order of Rockstar.
Yeah, they don't need to do videos of Steve Pastrano, jumping Travis motorcycles. Did I misstate his last name?
The motorcycle guy? Isn't that Travis Pastrano?
Oh, did I say Steve?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I apologize. Travis. Yes, yeah. I knew that. Travis Pastrano, the daredevil motorcycle jumper guy, they don't need to do commercials of him jumping, 20 cars on a motorcycle. Just do Matt and I in our show, just with headsets, just rocking it. And people are like, I need a rock star. You sold right there with that commercial.
Yeah. People can envision it. It's an untapped market.
It is. People do not see themselves jumping over 10 cars in a stadium on a motorcycle. But they can see themselves on a headset doing a radio show. And they're like, if I drink a Rockstar, I can do that. I'm there. So
yeah, much more relatable. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's why Rockstar does not sponsor this show. It does actually give money to a guy that rides a motorcycle.
That was my best sales pitch.
Yeah. There's some reality there.
That was for Tom Wilson, the CEO of, the vice president of marketing for Rockstar. See if he's buying. I'm selling, baby. You just buy.
Yeah.
All right. I've got a tax tip.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. This tax tip is the opportunity zone. And Matt and I just decided when I shared with him that I'm going to do my tip on this, we both realized we're going to do an entire show on opportunity zones in the next 2 to 3 weeks. A small tip on this show is not going to do it justice.
Yeah.
So let me just explain the concept.
Can we call it Oz Opportunity Zone? It's kind of like, shorthand is Oz.
The Yellow
Oz,
Road.
Oz Fund. Yeah. The Land awesome. Of Oz is the tax geeks call it.
I can do that. We're geeks. The land of Oz. Okay. So when I say Oz during this tip, everybody, imagine some parentheses with a little quotations mark around opportunity zone. That's really what I'm saying. Oz.
This is my contribution to the tip.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I couldn't have finished it without you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now here's how opportunity zones work in concept. They are easier than 1031 exchanges. They motivate you to invest in some cash flowing real estate, and they save you taxes. They were established under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Basically, Congress said, we want to do 2,500 opportunity zones around the country, and we're going to let the governors choose 50 locations in their state. So 50 governors choose 50 tracts of land in small towns, areas that needed a little juice, if you know what I'm saying, from investors to come in and make that place a little less ghetto. They're going to call it an opportunity zone. And if you come into these zones, so Texas governors chose 50 locations, Arkansas governor chose 50 locations. You can go to their state websites, and there's websites all over the Google
Yeah. And when we sell, when he says locations, these are huge tracts of land and areas and thousands of parcels.
Yes. And these are cities. This isn't just raw land in the middle of Oklahoma. This is San Diego. I mean, there's spots all over. So you can go on a state website or federal websites and find these zones. And then if you have a capital gain in any area of your life, this is the crazy part. It has to be long-term capital gains from the sale of stock, the sale of a business, the sale of raw land, the sale of real estate, any sort of capital gain that you're facing. You take just the capital gain and invest it in an opportunity zone property. You can defer tax. You can also get a reduction in the capital gain tax you owe. And if you hold it long enough, you will never pay gain on the property you bought when you sell it. Now, there's a lot there. Hence, we're going to do a show on this. But I've got a blog article on this at markjkohler.com. If you just Google Mark Kohler Opportunity Zone, you're going to see a video on YouTube as well. You can start getting your feet wet. Wet your whistle. Feet, your whistle, whatever you want to wet. You're just whistle or feet. You just get there. And then you can start your study on the Opportunity Zone. But here's the cool part that's an example, because everybody asks this. Hold it. If I sell a property for $300,000 and my capital gain is only $50,000, do I have to invest the whole $300,000 like a 1031 exchange? No, you do not have to buy a property of equal value or greater. Just take the $50,000 and go invest it, and you can defer that gain. Mm-hmm. So this is a big deal. It's only between now and 2023, 2024 that you can do this under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. It's stimulating economic growth in areas all over the country. It's a great little gig. So learn about it. If you're facing a capital gain in 2019 from the sale of stock or any capital gain, study the Opportunity Zone. Could be a nice little perk.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had clients look at it just as a way of diversification, you know, for stock. The stock market's been on a run. There's high valuations there. A lot of clients have looked at it and said, you know what? I can sell some of the stock that I have in my personal brokerage account and just roll out the gains. Sell some of it down, roll out the gains, and get into some real estate and get a little more diversification. And this could be, these are even small businesses you could invest in Opportunity Zones. Real estate's the most common right now, but there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Yeah. Oh, and I want to make one last point for everybody listening before we get into our topic. There's a lot of misinformation on this point. The rule says you have to invest in an opportunity zone fund. And there are companies all out there saying, we've got a fund. You can invest in our fund. You got to do it in a fund. We got your fund.
Ours qualifies.
Our fund qualifies. And you think, oh, well, I just wanted to buy that cute little duplex down the road that's inside the opportunity zone geographical area, but I guess I have to do it in a fund. I can't do it. No, guys, your own LLC can qualify as a fund. It has to be a two-member LLC that invests in an opportunity zone property. Done. We were kind of surprised that there's all this salesmanship on the web of, you got to be a part of an opportunity zone fund. We're your fund. We're your fund. And I'm like, whoa. Why isn't anybody saying you can set up your own darn freaking LLC? We've been doing it all year long at KKOS Lawyers, and you can go buy property in the zone and you don't have to be a part of some huge fund. So do not get the sales pitch that you have to invest in a quote unquote Wall Street fund. Call us up. Let's set up your own little LLC. You're in business. Let's go. You got your own opportunity zone fund. Boom. You can even do this with IRAs. You can do it with 401ks. You can do it with your brother, your sister, your aunt, your uncle. Let's form an LLC with multiple parties. Let's pool our money. You drop in your capital gain. We're in business.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Love it. Okay. Well, yes, possible. Yeah. Lots to it, but really cool strategy. And I like how you compared it to the 1031 at the beginning too, because it has so much more flexibility than the 1031. And it's not just tax deferral, it reduces the tax too. Very cool.
Yeah. Okay, now topic of the hour.
Yes.
Want to introduce it? Do you want me to?
Yeah. I'll let you introduce it. This is more your cup of tea. You're a can of Rockstar Restore,
my flavor of Rockstar.
Right. Yeah. So, why don't you intro? I'll play color commentary.
Okay. Well, when it comes to tax planning, and this is really what it's about, from an asset protection standpoint, I'll just get it off the table. Some people talk about putting certain real estate or businesses in their spouse's name. We had a female surgeon that was a client of ours, and her husband was a stay-at-home dad. And we put some of the assets in the dad's name because she was a high-risk candidate for a lawsuit. And so we can move assets around for asset protection between spouses. Very tricky. You got to worry about prenups, postnups, possible divorce. We're not going there today. So this is not about, so I want to get this off the table.
Yeah.
This topic today is not about asset protection and which spouse should own what. Mm-hmm. Also, Matt, this is not about estate planning. Why don't you say this is not about that? I'm putting you on the spot here, but an estate plan is totally different.
Yeah. In your estate plan, you're going to outline who gets what. Usually, you know, first spouse passes, the other spouse inherits the assets, and then maybe it goes to your kids or other beneficiaries. And that should be done in, you know, your revocable living trust typically. And, you know, everyone's filing, I mean, married couples are filing joint tax returns, right? So how I'm pushing this income from an estate standpoint, it's not like we're filing separate returns or anything, or it is not about that either. You know, really it's about tax planning, retirement planning, maybe benefit planning in some certain instances. That's more what it's about.
Yep. Very good. So we're going to just go back and forth here and share some of the perspectives that need to be considered when you talk about putting your spouse on payroll. And we're just going to call it spouse. It's, you know, could be the wife is the primary breadwinner. It could be the husband that's primary breadwinner. We're not going to worry about that, the genders and, you know, all that stuff. We're going to just worry about, I've got a business, and this is how it typically evolves and where the question comes from. I've got a business, and you may be taking draws. You might be doing a payroll draw split, which we talk about on our S-Corp podcast and our writings and our blogs and videos. I can't say enough about the S-Corporation strategy.
Right.
So many of you that have a business that's already making money, you're going to be in an S-Corp anyway. And if that concept shocks you right now at the point, stop. Mm-hmm. Go listen to our podcast on S-Corporations and just Google Kohler or Sorensen and S-Corps, and you're going to see plenty of articles and videos that explain why the S-Corp is powerful. So what happens is a business owner has their S-Corp, they're doing their payroll dividend split. I use the word dividend loosely. It's K-1, W-2 split. And then they go, oh, my spouse wants some money. They help in the business. We want to help that spouse feel appreciated. And we also, here's a big misnomer, they go, I want my spouse to earn Social Security for the future.
Yeah.
And so so with that in mind, they don't call me or call our accountants or call Matt. Yeah. They just do it.
They just give the instruction and say, add them to payroll.
Add them to payroll. And and then at the end of the year, we get planning and I go, okay, let's talk about your spouse compensation. Mm-hmm. They go, oh, I already did that. I put my spouse on payroll for $1,000 a month or $1,000 a week or whatever. And I'm like, what? Why'd you do that? Well, I wanted to pay him or her.
Yeah.
I wanted Social Security. And that's where this problem arises. There's a lot more to consider.
Yeah. And I think we're kind of like the little kid, you know, when we hear that, we like, but why, you know, but why did you add them? Cause we like adding them for certain reasons, but not automatically.
Yes.
Right. So, like let's get one of the couple of misnomers out. The Social Security one you brought up. If you say, well, I threw them on for $1,000 a month, I want to make sure they get Social Security, right? So I'm going to get the Social Security benefit because I'm paying them, but I want to make sure they get it. Well, actually, for the most part, a spouse, a non-working spouse, or even a spouse that's working part-time and doesn't have a big Social Security benefit built up with the Social Security Administration is going to get the spousal benefit, which is half of their working spouse's Social Security. So you're still getting your full Social Security award, but they get an additional award that's half of your award.
Without even getting a W-2.
Without even doing anything or getting a W-2. It's called the spousal benefit. And so unless you're going to pay them more than half of what you're making, you're not ahead of the game really on Social Security.
You're behind.
Yeah. And because what are you going to do? You're paying more payroll taxes to do that. Right? You're paying in when you didn't have to. You're paying into some Medicare too. And so you're losing money from a tax standpoint in adding them in for the Social Security perk. So I wouldn't, we don't like adding it for Social Security because the spousal benefit's there already.
And let's stay with this for a minute. Just some of you are like, really? I didn't know that. And when I first heard this, I remember Matt and I, when we were strategizing, we were astonished by this.
Yeah, I was like, huh.
Yeah, it's an interesting takeaway. So what happened was back when Social Security was established in I don't know the exact year, but shortly after it was established, they said, what about the non-breadwinner spouse? What's Social Security going to do for them? So this legislation was added to the Social Security statutes and the law that said a non-working spouse can't be penalized for not getting a job. We want to take care of them because they, you know, this is back in the 50s and 60s where the stay-at-home mom was more common. And they said this stay-at-home mom needs to be taken care of. So we're going to give her half of the benefit, even if she didn't work a W-2 one day in her life. She still gets half of the same benefit the breadwinner got. And that was a policy decision.
Yes. Yeah. And it's still around. So keep that in mind. So I think the first tip is don't be doing it for the Social Security benefit for the non-working spouse.
Yeah. Now, if you want to do the math, let me throw this out. You can go to ssa.gov and take your primary breadwinner, for example, plug in their Social Security and their age. Their Social Security number and their age, and the SSA website will tell you what your expected benefit's going to be in X number of years. And you can go, huh, I never knew that's what my Social Security would be. And by the way, we've done it before in the last year and a half. We're going to do it again in the next few weeks, is have a special podcast on Social Security. We bring in our expert, Randy Lubke, and we talk about when should I claim Social Security? Because the longer you defer, the bigger your Social Security as well.
Yeah, there's so much to it.
So much.
We will hit it. We will get deep into that.
So side note there. So when you go to the website and you say, here's what my expected Social Security is, if I want to just run into the Social Security office and take it on day one, here's what my benefit is. Cut it in half and there's your spouse's. Now, if you want to play around on a calculator, and there's calculators out there that'll say, how much does my spouse have to take in salary during their lifetime in order to get that same half benefit? And you'll be shocked. And you're going to go, holy crap, I'm going to take X number of dollars in payroll and pay FICA, and the F word, mind you, the F word, FICA. I got to pay FICA on the spousal payroll just to get what I'm already going to get anyway. And then, I'll pay him or her more. Well, then you start doing the math on that and you're like, freak, I could put that money in savings, get a better rate of return, and take the half benefit and be leaps and bounds ahead. And so that's the concept. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate us letting it peel away the onion there, but it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're not doing it for Social Security. So what's the first reason why you would do it? Like, when are you telling a client where it's like, dude, you're the perfect candidate, let's get your spouse added on?
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw the softball to Mr. Matt Sorensen because he is the expert on this. And so I'm going to set him up. Here's the pitch. I mean, if any of you had T-ball and the dad comes running up to the plate and puts the little ball on the black plastic T-ball unit, I'm going to come up and do this for Matt so he can just swing away. I think the number one reason why you should ever put a spouse on payroll is because they want to contribute to the retirement plan for the company, which might be a solo 401k. That's the number one reason. So Matt, tell us why that's so cool, if you don't mind. Did I tee it up enough? Do you need anything else? Do you need a little pat on the shoulder? You can do it, Matt.
You can do it. You got this. Come on. Oh, all the pressure. Oh, man. I don't want to let you guys down.
There's a juice box in it for you.
And then I'm the kid that's going to throw the bat back, swing, miss, and fall down. Around and fall on my butt. Okay. Yeah. It's if you've been to T-ball, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm going to compose myself.
Okay. 401k.
Yeah. Let's say that I'm self-employed and I have a solo 401k. All right. I'm cranking. I got my business and, you know, I'm loving my self-employment. I'm making money. And I'm like, man, I can put $56,000 a year into this thing, based on what I make, based on my W-2, if I'm doing an S-corp, or my net profit, if I'm like a sole proprietor. That's a lot of money, right? But what if I added my spouse in? I could do another 56 into my spouse's account. So I could get a total of $112,000 into between 56 in my account in order to double up, essentially.
Spouse account and your account. You said my account twice, but yes, spouse account.
And my account, spouse account. Yes, yes. Yep. So, dang it. See, T-ball is not as easy as you think.
No, you know, it is not.
It's not that, you know, it's a little tricky. Okay. So basically we're doubling up on the contributions. But now in order to do that, I can't just say, well, this is my spouse, I'll just throw money to him or her. No, no, no. They got to be on payroll. Yeah. So if I'm the S-Corp, I got to add them on a W-2. And the W-2, how much W-2 they take, determines how much I can throw in for them. So if you wanted to max out for you and your spouse, you both have to have W-2s of like 138 grand to both be able to drop in 56. But on that, and that's your W-2. If you just want to throw in 19, which is the employee contribution, just pay your spouse 19 and you can throw in every dollar of that, all 19 of that, over into as a retirement plan contribution. Cause that's your first 19 goes in dollar for dollar. So,
yep. Now so that's, let's add to this.
Yes.
And let me add a couple points. Cause, this is so important. A few points. I have actually recorded a YouTube video on this, on when to pay your spouse. And also I shot a video on the 401k sweet spot. Now, if you're going to Google Kohler and sweet spot, I wouldn't recommend it. You might get some websites that are inappropriate for tax viewing. Yeah. Don't just throw out Mark Kohler sweet spot. No. It's not pretty. But seriously, I have. It says 401k sweet spot. And here's why. And I want to correct Matt a little bit. If you want to put $19,000 in for your spouse this year, you have to create payroll enough to cover the FICA. So the payroll is actually around $23,500, something like that. You take out the 15%, boom, the net paycheck would be 19, and then the spouse would check box number 2, 3, whatever it is. I can't remember, 13, 12. You check the box and go, I want to put that in my 401k. So the spouse's W-2 ends up being zero. So they don't get taxed on it.
Traditional, yeah.
Yep. You get a tax write-off in your business and your spouse dropped 19 grand in the 401k. And that can be sometimes the most efficient payroll level, because that's the sweet spot. And a lot of times, because if you do 30 grand for your spouse, okay, I can do 19 plus 25% of the 30 grand. So I might be around 7,000 to 8,000 more in matching. But look at, you're paying FICA up to 30 to just get a $7,000 to $8,000 benefit. So you have to start, there's a law of diminishing returns. Any of you engineers, accountants out there, you start to see the benefit kind of trail off into the future the more you pay your spouse, because you're paying FICA out the door to get a less benefit. But the first 19 grand, man, freaking home run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you actually even get 25% that you can throw in off the 19 even, technically.
Oh yeah, that's right. Absolutely, so that, sorry. So there's another 5.
Is still there. So yeah, that's almost another 5. So you really, you know, you pay yourself 23, let's say, to take into account the FICA, you can actually almost drop in, you know, $24,000.
Yeah.
And that's coming from the company, which will throw in the match, 25% of 19, which is going to be
here, I'm going to do
tax deductible.
Heaven forbid we as tax lawyers actually get our math freaking correct while we're on the show.
It's
so
almost 5.
I'm going to... You know, we do our best, folks. You know, this is all concept, you know. But I love this. And a lot of people think maxing out payroll is always the right thing to do to get the 56 in the first place. So you have to find the sweet spot. Pardon?
Sorry. I was just dropping in because I figured it out. I want to beat you to it.
Yeah.
I think
24,000 in payroll. 4,000. If we do 24,000 in payroll times 0.25, is 6,000 plus the 19,000. Matt just said that the summary is 25,000 goes into the 401k and you've got a $24,000 write-off on your tax return. And the W-2 might be a net 1,000 or so. I'm not going to take more time to figure out that math, but this is really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's reason number one. I mean, that is, that's going to be 9 out of 10 times, I think maybe 8 out of 10 times of why to add on the spouse is I want to start, I can put more money into the retirement account by adding a spouse on.
Okay. Now we got to peel away the onion on a few points, people. There's the difference between the solo 401k. Cause I know some of you out there are going, well, I don't have other employees. That's just making sense to me. Others of you are saying, well, I have other employees in the business. What do I do? So we're going to come back to that. The other question, Matt, I want to ask you is, what happens if I say, well, you know, we're not rolling in cash over here, 19,000 or 56,000. That's wonderful, Matt. That sounds cool on paper, but you know, an IRA of $5,000 to $6,000 is all we can afford right now. Can a spouse fund an IRA without taking payroll in the business?
Yes, actually. You can do what's called a spousal contribution, spousal IRA, and take into account the working spouse's pay to make a contribution for the non-working spouse. So now if the spouse had other earned income, maybe a part-time job or something like that, you know, you could count that and presume they don't have a retirement plan at their work. But even if they don't, for married couples, you can have the non-working spouse make what is called a spousal IRA contribution, where it's determined off the other working spouse's income. And you could even do that in the backdoor Roth IRA.
Yeah. Now this is so important, people, because I've got to repeat what Matt just said, because many of you, I know it would go over some people's heads real quick. Remember this. Most of our life, we're under the understanding that I've got to have a job in order to contribute to an IRA. So again, business owners get into this fallacy of, well, we're not going to do a 401k. I don't want to do it for my other employees. It's too expensive, or whatever the reason is, or we don't have enough money to fund a 401k. So I want my spouse at least to do an IRA. So I'm going to put him or her on payroll for $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000, and then they can do an IRA. Boom. So you made another mistake. If you take 15% of $7,000, you just paid in taxes close to 15. See, I'm going to do this. Sorry. I've got to do my actual math here. You're going to spend $1,000 in FICA that you didn't have to. You didn't have to. You literally just gave the government $1,000 in Social Security and Medicare because you thought your spouse had to take that payroll in order to do an IRA. So Matt's point here is so important, because you could fund a traditional IRA, convert it to a Roth if your income is too high, or leave it as a traditional and get a write-off on the front page of your 1040. And all of this is done without even putting your spouse on payroll.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. So if you just want to drop in the six, that's the easy solution.
Yeah. Yeah. So powerful. Okay. Now let's say, Matt, let's get it off. I'm going to just say it. If we're going to get it off the table, if you're a solo entrepreneur, so you've got a small business, maybe you're a realtor, a contractor, you don't have, you use a lot of subs, you're flipping properties, you're selling online, and you don't have any full-time employees. You may have part-time employees, which is fine, but you don't have any full-time employees. Two words, solo 401k. Mm-hmm. We can set it up so you can self-direct it. You can invest it. We have a DIY for $499, full service for $999. You spend time with an attorney, understand how to use it. It's a loaded gun. If you don't understand the rules, you've got to be careful. Keep it in a holster at all times. That's a whole other topic. Yeah. But that's easy. So any of you out there that are a solo entrepreneur, the question of putting your spouse on payroll and doing a solo 401k, it's a no-brainer. You don't even go down the IRA path. Don't even go there. Mm-hmm. But if I have employees, Matt, what are my options, or what are the issues to consider? If I have employees, I want to do more than an IRA, what should I consider?
Well, you can do just the what we call a safe harbor 401k is going to be your next most common option. That's even what we have in the law firm. You know, we have employees here. So you could do a, and this would be very common in many small businesses. You know, in fact, a lot of major companies are doing safe harbor 401ks. And that's basically a 401k plan. And the reason it's called safe harbor is because the IRS has said, if you offer it under these criteria, you make it available to everybody. There's, you know, you can put some limitations. They got to work for you for a year and stuff like that. But you don't have to have an actuary and do testing of highly compensated employees and non-highly compensated employees, all these 401k things that are super complicated and expensive to comply with. They're like, there's the vanilla 401k. Everyone can put in their employee contributions of 19 off their own income. This is rank and file employees and business owner. And then there's a match criteria where essentially it's dollar for dollar for 3% of what they make and 50% on the next 2%. It's a little complex, but there's some smaller matching in there that you offer yourself, and you would also offer to everyone else. It's not this 25% solo K match. Okay. It's not that sweet. So that's basically what safe harbor is. But if I'm, you know, let's say I'm a business owner, and let's say I'm a dentist, okay? I got this, and I set up this safe harbor 401k for me and all my other dentists that may work for me, or hygienists and everybody. And I'm saying, all right, I'm throwing money in. I want to add my spouse on. Well, you can add him or her, your spouse, on to payroll, and they get to participate just like an employee. You know, they can throw in 19 for them. This is the employee contribution. and it's coming from them. The company puts in their small match of the next 3 to 5% based on what they made. And so that's another way you can add in just, and now you're offering this to other employees though too, because you have employees, so you can't just discriminate against them and say, well, this 401k is only for me and my spouse. No, no, no. It's, you're going to have to offer it to your other employees in the business. So,
and I love it. And once we get into this 401k world, there's the super 401k where there's a carve out and you can do a DB plan and you can put away even more. And then we start. There's a lot of options when you get into this realm. And I'll just say this. This is a good summary takeaway, people. If you want to save, if you're married, and again, this is a topic about paying spouse. So we're assuming most of the people listening now plan on being married or are married. If you want to put away as a couple anywhere from $12,000 to $14,000, if you're age 50 or over together, you want to put away maybe 10 to 15 grand. The IRAs are the way to go, and do a backdoor Roth if you need to. Just do a traditional IRA, non-deductible, convert to a Roth, or do a traditional and get the write-off. Just stay in that realm. That's your game. Don't worry about all this crap. Don't
much put your cheaper, spouse on much people. Easier, less tax reporting and forms to the IRS and compliance.
Way simple. You can self-direct. You can go open that IRA at directedira.com right now and just open the IRAs, get it started, and just start putting in a couple thousand a month between the two of you. And you don't even have to put your spouse on payroll. You're not going to worry about any of this crap, and your spouse is going to get that spousal benefit on Social Security. And let me tell you right now, if you're married and you're putting away 12K a year and you're consistent and you're getting at least a 10 to 12% return and you're self-directing, you're going to have millions by giving 17 to 20 years of retirement. You are going to be doing just fine. And if you want to watch my video on YouTube, type in Mark Kohler $1 million, Mark Kohler $1 million. And I show you the math on how you can easily have $1 million in a Roth IRA by the time you retire. So check that out.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's way freaking cool. Now that's option one, just 12 grand a year, a couple thousand a month. I'm sorry, a thousand a month. I said a couple thousand, I apologize. This is 10 to 12,000 a year.
Well, between the two of you,
Between the two of you, it's a thousand a month. Now, if your business is killing it and you want to put away $20,000, $30,000, or $40,000 a year and things are going really well and you want to sock it away, you're on a fast track to retirement, you want a Roth 401k, a traditional 401k, a little of both, you want to self-direct, then we talk solo. We're going to talk solo 401k. If you have employees, probably a safe harbor. And then you're going to figure out the sweet spot of what to give your employees, matching or no matching, yourself, whatever. And you and your spouse are going to go down this $19,000 contribution level, which is option two.
Yep.
I'm going to say option three, and then you add or take away from my three options. So option one is IRAs. Number two, go down the 401k path. Never go down the SEP path. It's stupid. Don't even think about it. And then third, if you want to put away 50 to 100 grand or more, now we're talking a carve out super 401k DB plan combination. And then we're going to get financial advisors in. There's going to be actuarial costs and every year, but we can sock away hundreds of thousands of dollars if you're in that boat. So three phases, Matt, what do you like? Is that okay? Would you add in?
Yeah, I would amend the numbers a little bit on two and three. Cause even in the solo, okay, I can throw on 56 for me, 56 for my wife. So we're talking 100,000 even in the solo K round. Yeah. So I would say if you want to do 100K plus for a married couple here, where we're talking you and your spouse, you're adding on payroll, you could get away with the 100,000 already in a solo K, which is much easier.
And but if you want to
go past that, yes, cash balance plan, all these other things, these
deep we can talk.
Pension plans. Oh,
yeah.
Way more you could throw. We've seen clients put 300,000 away in 1 year in those types of plans and get a $300,000 tax deduction.
This is how the rich get richer. And folks, we want to applaud you for listening to this show, because some of you right now, you would be thrilled to fund an IRA, and God bless you. Do it. Get a good habit of saving happening. Get addicted to it. What I love is some of these new apps. I was talking to Matt about the Acorn app. I love it, where you can make automatic contributions throughout the week and write-ups from anything you spend, get rounded up to the next dollar, and it drops right into your Roth or your IRA. Acorns is amazing. And it's, you know, Matt, see, okay, digression here, but this is important for everybody.
Okay.
Time Magazine did a thing last year on addiction, and they had a whole spread on America and the problems with addiction. And it wasn't just plain old drugs. It, you know, hardcore stuff. It was opioids. It was porn. It was video games. It was fetishes in weird ways. Watch a show. You know, there's always a reality show on that stuff. But right. there are a lot of addictive problems in America. And some of you as families know it. You're dealing with it. You've got kids that are maybe struggling with bulimia. Who know? There's so much. But yeah. What they discovered was, again, it's the same problem, dopamine. Dopamine is a chemical released mm-hmm. when you do something that creates this high. For some, it's drugs. For some, mm-hmm. it's porn. For some, it's a video game. Whatever it is, that mm-hmm. releases dopamine and we get addicted to it. Well, what these savings apps are doing, like Acorns and there's another one I wanted to say. But anyway, Robinhood's out there and Stash. Stash is cool. Stash, yeah. And what's cool about these is your app is always on your phone and it starts giving you a ping and a little update every time you're saving money. And it's a release of a dopamine where, oh my gosh, I just saved more money. I just dropped money in my IRA. And you watch that video of mine where you can have $1 million in a Roth IRA. And throughout the week, your phone is giving you a little pat on the back every time you're saving money. It becomes addictive. And really people, and Dave Ramsey talks about this, saving can become addictive and it's exciting and it becomes fun. I know that sounds geeky, but mm-hmm. we as Americans need to get on this bandwagon. And I think this is related to this whole topic too, because if we can get our spouse involved and we're saving and we're getting addicted to it and we're cutting our costs in our life, you're going to have more financial freedom sooner than you know it.
Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to take the hoop from one end of the court to the other. I was
wondering where you're going when you start talking about addiction and stuff and, you know, drugs and porn and video games. I was like, where is he going with this? It's like Dr. Mark over there.
Yeah.
By the way, I did this helicopter tour over this neighborhood called Beverly Park when I was in LA with my daughter. It was like her Christmas present. But we're flying over LA. Very cool. It was very fun, like this helicopter tour. But you kind of fly over Beverly Park, which is like the nicest neighborhood in Beverly Hills. There's like all the celebrities. I'm serious. There's like 50 like A-list celebrities. You want to have the best house in all of Beverly Park?
No. I'd like
to. And we're talking like Jeff Bezos has a house there. Elon Musk has a house there. Jennifer Aniston has a house there. Beyonce and Jay-Z have a house in there. Mark Wahlberg has a house in there. Wow. I'm like, these are, you know what I mean? Like the biggest of celebrities.
Okay.
Dr. Phil has the coolest house.
What?
Biggest, best house. Yeah. Freaking Dr. God. Phil. Anyways.
How is Jerry Springer's?
I didn't think he has one.
They're the same. Same genre.
He's not on that stratosphere, I guess. So.
Yeah. Isn't Jerry Springer married to Connie Chung? I know that sounds.
I think he is. Yeah.
I think he is.
Someone is. Someone famous is.
Yeah.
That's a power couple. I don't know who it is, though.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, do we want to touch on one other thing, Mark, in terms of paying your spouse? Are there any like benefits, like health-wise, maybe HRA, where you may want to add a spouse in?
Yep. Well, I'm sorry. I want to correct that. Any Connie Chung, I apologize because you might have been offended if you're listening. I know she's a regular listener. Mickey, he married Mickey Velton, a TV presenter and former mayor of Cincinnati.
Oh.
That's who Jerry Springer married.
Never heard of her. Connie Chung is married to someone famous, though.
Yeah, I know. I can't remember who she was married to. I remember being surprised who Connie Chung married, but I'm a Today Show fan, so whatever. Okay, now, where were we going with all this? But I got two more. Okay.
Oh, you got two more. Okay.
Can I throw one more out?
Yeah, we got to stop talking about Connie Chung and Dr. Phil's houses then.
Oh, we get so distracted. Squirrel. Okay, here's this. A lot of people get sucked into the healthcare conversation incorrectly, and then they miss out on where there's a little bit of tax paradise. The incorrect assumption is that if I put my spouse on payroll, we can qualify for a group medical plan. Wrong. Under the Healthcare Act, Affordable Tax Care Act, there is no group opportunity for a husband-wife. You've got to have a third party non-family member on payroll in order to qualify for a group healthcare plan. So, and I get people all the time, I got to put my spouse on payroll so I can get a group medical plan. No,
not gonna. No, it doesn't work. Nice try.
Doesn't work. Yeah. But here's what you miss. A lot of people hear that and they just discount healthcare as any sort of strategy. What I love, and we've talked about this for years, it's a chapter in my book, is the HRA. It's called a health reimbursement arrangement. Now, it has nothing to do with insurance. A health reimbursement arrangement is just how it's defined. It's healthcare reimbursement arrangement. So if I have an employee, I can offer to that employee to reimburse him or her for all their medical costs up to a certain amount or sometimes unlimited, depending on the HRA plan. Mm-hmm. Now, you can create a structure to compensate your spouse and include all of the medical of him or her, including mm-hmm. their dependents, which is you. So you can backdoor the entire family's out-of-pocket medical, deductibles, prescription drugs, eyes, dental, copays, anything out there that mm-hmm. has to deal with this medical, the 502 publication, publication 502. Get mm-hmm. there, look at this list. This could be your dog in the house that's a comfort animal to your kid that's got, you know, addiction issues, you know, back to that. Whatever, I don't know. But you can write off even the service animal in your house. But this is all a write-off under the HRA. Now, huge other topic. We've talked about doing an entire radio show just on the HRA. We'll get around to it, but you can Google or YouTube Kohler HRA. There's a couple of videos out there. I've got articles out there on that. And we open the door to that planning. So that is so I put my wife, Jennifer, on payroll sometimes, never to do the 401k, not to get Social Security, but I put her on payroll through the HRA plan, and her payment is all of our medical expenses. So there's still no W-2 issued, but with an HRA plan, I get a write-off for all the medical on top of the insurance premiums. So anyway, that's another reason to do that. Put a spouse on payroll.
So all right. You said you had one more. Did you have one more?
Well, I mean, for those that have been married more than 10 years, there's kind of a little, so it can be a little fun to put your spouse on payroll for all the wrong reasons. You know, yeah, I'll give you a paycheck for some services. Okay. You know, yeah, you could say that. You know, it could, you know, there's role playing now. You know,
okay.
All right. Your employee. And
you want to sexually harass somebody or something?
Bring home a paycheck for your spouse and say,
"It's legal. We're married. Come on."
You want a little sexual harassment? I'm game. So, you know. So this could add another dimension to your role playing in your marriage. Now, for any of you married under the 10 years, you don't need that. You're in love. You're happy. Life's great. But you've been married more than 10 years.
Yeah,
that paycheck could be
a way to spice changer. It up. Yeah, spice it up.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Jen can't listen to this show.
Yeah. Then we might get a rating on the show because of all of your, you know, all these buzzwords are going to get picked up by Apple and they're going to be like, this is explicit.
I'm going to get the little explicit. E on our show. E for explicit.
We might get more listens actually with that.
We could.
You know,
is there any other buzzword we should throw out?
Yeah.
I'm going to, Hummer, I know some families say, yeah, I'm not kidding. I know there's people out there that will listen to this in the car with their kids. So, yeah, and they say, "Mark, we love your show." So we're going to leave it here at PG. I think we're okay. You know, someday we'll say this is going to be an E show and give the disclaimer for the kids in the car. And then we'll.
Yeah, that's E for everyone.
E for everyone. There you go. Well, I hope you guys have fun. We try to make this a little interesting and dumb and try to have a good time with it and make it fun as at the same time. So
taxes, legal, retirement, man, it can sound boring. So appreciate you hanging with us as we try to keep it light. I want to just give a plug. If you like this show, please give us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to it. And of course you can sign up for the newsletter, refreshyourwealth.com, learn about prior shows. We are always delivering quality content every week, updates on tax deadlines. Mark's videos are always posted up there, as are mine. Mark's more prolific on the videos than I am. But staying. But
apparently, you're the good looking one.
Yeah. So, as you learned on the show today.
Nope, just help.
So, well, thanks for being with us. Of course, we will be back next week with another amazing episode of Refresh Your Wealth.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.